Welcome to Hallmarked for Murder. I'm Kat.
I'm Sarah.
And welcome to, is this the most basic season, fall, or is Christmas the most basic season?
I mean, I think in Hallmark land, it's definitely Christmas, but I think in the land of the, how to properly phrase this, in our state, and surrounding areas, fall is probably the most basic season because
we don't really have it.
Correct. So we milk the 2 weeks that we have decent weather for every last drop.
And the 2 weeks that we have like kind of some colorful leaves before they all immediately blow off.
And then we have a really high burn ban fire danger incidence. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah. So welcome to that. I haven't really been living it up, to be honest. I really need some more. I have carved zero pumpkins. I did have a harvest tea today at a coffee shop that tasted a lot like it was basically just cider. So I'll take what I can get. So today we are continuing the crossword mystery series. And today we're covering movie episode 3, Abracadabra.
Yep, that's the name of it.
When a magic act turns out to be murder, Tess Harper is on the case to find the real killer. And this one is written by women. Their names are Cicely and Catherine Rhett. So I couldn't actually find any information about them, if they're mother, daughter, or sisters, or do you feel like this particular episode or movie seemed different? I didn't really.
No, it seemed, I had a lot of thoughts, but it did not seem different. No.
Okay. I did notice that Logan did not utter one single talk to me.
Oh.
So I think that this really the only change
the
I noticed.
Feminization of the script.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It brought in that female narrative.
Yeah, women, if you were to say, talk to me, to your SO, who's female of some whatever, for any situation, maybe she wouldn't like that. Maybe Cicely and...
Catherine.
What's... Tyson? No.
Yes, this was written by Cicely Tyson.
I mean, she seems talented.
I mean, if Andrea Canning can be a Dateline correspondent and write scripts for Hallmark and Lifetime.
And a mother of
And a mother
seven?
Of six.
Six?
Yes. Sure. Cicely Tyson might be. Is she still with us? I don't know.
Cannot confirm and won't look it up.
Okay.
Don't want to hex her.
Who can remember? So the only thing I could find about Cicely. I've forgotten the normal way to pronounce that since Cicely Strong is from SNL.
Well, Sicily is a city in Italy. Or a state? Cicely is a place in Italy. Cicely is C-E-C-I-L-Y.
Cicely. Anyway, she's traditionally an editor. And the most recent thing that she worked on was the thing about Pam, which was the adaptation of a Dateline with... Renee Zellweger.
Okay.
That I had mixed feelings about.
And I haven't watched.
Because it
usual.
Was very campy for dealing with real life people and people who were very tragically murdered. But so we did get the theme song again. So that's a thing.
And like the montage.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same opening montage.
Very like 90s. It had a real 90s vibe.
Real
to it
Alex
for me.
Mack situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we start out with Tess visiting the Magic Manor, where she's been taking magic classes to prepare for a puzzle and for her birthday.
I need to maybe state sooner rather than later. I think you know this about me. I despise magic.
Oh.
And like magicians. So this whole movie was really hard for me.
Oh, okay. I totally thought you were going to tell me that you took magic classes at some point.
Nope. I will never and I would never.
Okay.
I can't fully explain it. I don't care to. I really like Penn and Teller exclusively because they tell you about how their tricks work. I don't enjoy the feeling of somebody like smugly like showing me a trick and not like and like sort of thinking that they're like I feel like there's a real arrogance to it, and I don't like the showmanship. Mm-hmm. And that's I really struggle with that. And so the idea that like, well, whatever, it was hard for me. I don't like magic.
That's interesting that you describe it that way, because I would, based on those facts, I feel like I would also be very triggered by that. But I sort of am just more disinterested. I sit there and watch the tricks, and I'm like, illusions.
Illusions.
And I'm like, oh, that's fun. And then I just immediately my mind goes somewhere else. Like I have no real interest in finding out like how did they do that. Like I've never.
So I think, I mean, I feel similarly. I also don't care how they did that. It's the act of them doing it that it sort of like enrages me.
Mm-hmm. You're right about the arrogance. For sure.
Yeah. I've always really struggled with the idea of like superiority. I don't believe in like inherent superiority among people. And I can't. It feels like magicians really embody
deceptive.
That superiority. What did you say?
Deceptive.
There is a bit of deception, but I mean, I know that you're buying into that when you choose to like attend one of these shows. You're buying into like the deception, and I think probably a very skilled magician will make you feel a sense of like awe and wonder at the performance. Unfortunately, I feel like the majority of ones that I've encountered have not inspired such a sense of awe, and so I wonder if that exists, frankly. I don't know.
Well, I do think it also does depend on the personality, because like we witnessed three quote professional magicians in this movie, and I do think that it came off very differently because they all had different personalities. So I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
What did you think about Tess getting into magic? Did that seem like something that would, in her stiletto heels, that she would
clip-clop
over there?
No, I think Cicely and Catherine, like, have some kind of magic background, because, like, in what world does this make sense? Or one of them just, like, thought the word abracadaver at some point and was like, I'm going to write a movie around this.
I was wondering more if, like, because with this series, it all needs to be puzzle-based, right, for Tess to be able to sort of, like, bring her expertise. So there's only there's only a limited number of, like, puzzle-type, like, they did codes in the last one. The first one was crosswords. So this is like another sort of like where you sort of have to figure out the trick, or like,
but is it like
same kind of brain
mystery a puzzle?
Yes. Wow, there you go. Is that going to be our new tagline?
Maybe every mystery is a puzzle. That's a very basic tagline, so it would fit with some of our thematic elements here. No, I felt like I had like way more questions about Tess and her life after this movie than I've had about any of the other movies. So I don't know if that's like a good sign that they're like drawing me into her character, but I think for me it was more of a like generalized confusion, like, she's into magic and she's taking like magic in New York City as a full-time crossword puzzle writer who plays ping pong and table tennis, if those are the two same things, I still can't remember, in her leisure time, and also like randomly gets involved in multiple murders in all of her free time. She's also like spending extra effort to like get on the subway and go to some place and like take magic classes multiple days a week.
I actually find it a little inspiring because I'm in a bit of a rut right now. And the idea that like, because I don't have kids. And so theoretically I should have some time to like leisure time. And I do love the idea that, like, she is a single woman. She doesn't have kids. But she is clearly into, like, enrichment activities. And she's not so focused on, like, she clearly doesn't have a lot of girlfriends. Her only friend appears to be her aunt. And then she doesn't have a boyfriend. So she's not focused on like dating or men. Like she's really just like, I'm just going to live my life for me and just do things I enjoy and just enrich my life. And I'll take table tennis and then I'll take magic classes. Like I really liked that. That example of what like a professional woman could do with her time.
I think that's a pretty valid thought process. It's not the one I had, and I really appreciate the difference. We'll get into it as we go. But
okay.
I had a lot of questions about her life.
Yes. I mainly was distracted by the fact that she's doing all of these things while wearing very uncomfortable shoes. But
yeah, I did make a note at some point that I hate all of her shoes. And I don't understand how you can live in a city that primarily exists for walkers and walking people or standers and wear those shoes.
It just makes me uncomfortable. Because I think she's also very short. I meant to look up her height.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm relatively short, as you recently learned.
You're the average height for a woman.
Right.
I think she might be a little...
She's probably shorter than me, but I lived in Russia, early personal cat. And in the winter, you know, there's really no way to walk around in your fancy shoes. And even in the summer, it's pretty hard just because it's a lot of walking. There's a lot of walking there. So there's like, not everybody, but a lot of people like keep their nice shoes like at the office or whatever, and they like go in their boots, or they carry them in a bag with them and like go in their boots, go in their walking stuff, and then when they get there, like change into the nice thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes way more sense to me than this idea that she's like carrying two bags around everywhere she goes and wearing stilettos.
One for evidence.
And one for her, all of the stick pens she's connived unsuspecting policemen into buying for her.
So the magic manor that we see here, I think it is based on the Magic Castle in Hollywood, if you're familiar with that.
I am absolutely not familiar. Please tell
me. Yeah, I've heard some anecdotes and stories. It's pretty famous. It's a private clubhouse. You have to be a member to be able to go. It looks similar to the one we see. And it's pretty famous. But I was wondering if there was one in New York. So I did look up. And there was a magic townhouse in the 70s and 80s. That's now you can buy an apartment there for like $2 million or something like that. I looked it up.
Oh, that's unreasonable.
I think it's based on the image. I think it's probably more based on the Magic Castle in Hollywood. This particular one, I'm pretty sure, was filmed in a Scottish Rite Masonic temple in Ontario. Because in Hallmark, it's the Canadian parallel universe.
Well, we have a Masonic temple here in Oklahoma. Are we telling people where we're from? I guess we just did.
We just did.
In Guthrie, there's a gigantic Masonic thing. They film things there, too.
Oh, really? Yeah, I was going to say that'd be a great location.
Yeah.
So we meet the new crime reporter who will be working facing 4 inches across from Tess, and his name is Reed.
And she's the crossword puzzle editor, and he's the crime reporter, just so we're all once again aware that for some reason these jobs need to be 4 inches apart from each other.
Facing each other. And they're right in front of, like, the main desk for the paper. So I just, like, I'm fairly introverted. But how do they get anything done? Like, it's the most least productive.
She clearly doesn't get anything done,
that's
ever.
That's true. But it's like, could they just be 4 inches apart, but like facing opposite directions or like side by side? Like, it's just, it just makes me anxious just to.
So, okay, we also get a quick glimpse of the crossword puzzle that she's working on related to her magic class. And she fills in the words magic,
wand,
and French drop.
Oh, that's where I saw French drop. Okay.
Yeah, and then they bring that up, like, again, a couple times, I think, later in the movie. Where's Elliot?
Elliot's gone.
Did he get a futon?
He got the futon, and he just hiked it out of town.
Took it, put it on his back, and went to what's it called? Williamsburg? That's where people go.
Yeah, he's probably a barista now.
Oh, fingers crossed. But also, second question of location to me is, where are Reed's lips?
They want to be on Tess's.
They clearly want to be on Tess's, but they don't exist, so it's going to be pretty hard for him.
Okay.
Let's see.
I did notice that Elliot's desk is shown, but it's now being occupied by a blonde woman, so I guess he's gone. And then did you notice that, so I guess the crime reporter slot has not been filled for a while since Harris died, but that means that Josephine nor Elliot got the empty desk that's been right across from Tess this whole time. They just left it empty, I guess, in memoriam.
For Harris. Yeah.
Did you notice that Tess has a photo of her and Harris on her desk?
No, I didn't.
And they look like a couple.
Huh.
And it did make me wonder, were they a couple at some point?
And then they broke up, but then they kept working directly across from each other and having good, friendly vibes. And she kept their couple photo up.
Or brought it back out died? I
perhaps.
Don't know.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah, open floor plans. We're about to move offices, and my boss wants us to have an open floor plan, and I've lobbied hard against it because I can't. We find out that today is Tess's birthday, and she's going to celebrate at the Magic Manor with a table of eight. Apparently, she does not know who those eight people are going to be. And she has one seat filled, so Reed ends up coming with her on her birthday dinner.
After one day.
One day.
No, like 45 minutes, 30 minutes or less of knowing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have plans on that day at the last minute. So that maybe is normal for a lot of people. I don't know.
He was going to get lip injections.
Oh, that's
instead,
yeah.
He went for the birthday dinner.
Yeah, lay the groundwork.
We get a glimpse of Tessa's magic class, and she's distracted by a conversation between her instructor and Alistair, who's the house magician. And this is exactly like a Jessica Fletcher moment from Murder, She Wrote, whose secret is also to successful sleuthing is extreme eavesdropping. Like, cannot stay focused on an activity, like, always, like, looking around to see, like, is somebody having a private heated discussion somewhere that I can observe and note for later.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm going to start doing, I think.
So, yeah, that sounds good. Once when I got too many concussions back to back, I started having trouble isolating conversations. So I sort of couldn't focus on any one conversation. No matter where, like, the other conversation was happening, I would just hear, like, everything as this, like, gobbledygook mishmash of multiple streams of conversation filtering into my brain. So the ability to isolate and, like, stop focusing on what you're doing and listening to something else would have felt very exciting.
Well, everybody else is, like, practicing their little foam ball tricks or whatever, but she's, like, laser-focused on this argument. And then we get to go to Tessa's birthday dinner at the Magic Manor, and our guests are Candace, Josephine,
Tess, Reed
was the eighth seat.
I thought there were only five seats.
She originally said there was a table of eight and they needed to fill the eighth seat.
But I guess they only ever show us five people. Yeah.
I guess Tess has some very good friends that we don't ever see.
They stand just off camera for the whole movie and also her whole life. Because she's the main character.
Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes on these, they leave them without close friends because that complicates the narrative.
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
So Candace and Tess have, like, a open chair in between the two of them.
Yes. Well, Tess specifically, like, comes in, greets them that are already there, and then sits one seat away from
That's right.
Tess to leave that open seat available so that apparently Tess does not know that Candace invited Logan.
But she left a seat for him just in case.
Uh-huh.
Sort of like a lighthouse keeper's daughter. Just leave the light on. Just in case.
Well, like, if you were having a very intimate birthday gathering, wouldn't you be the one that selected, like, who the eight were that were going to be there?
Well, this is where I came into some questions about Tess. Like, I don't traditionally enjoy a lot of focus on myself, but on one's birthday, that's sort of, you know, maybe the day that you could allow a little bit more of that to happen. So I was like, are we trying to like read into this that Tess is very like, she just doesn't care, she just is so easygoing, she's go with the flow, like she doesn't really care that it's her birthday? Because also, who in G's name would ever spend their birthday at a magic show? I don't know. So that was like one question, like, is she just that carefree or like selfless? I don't know the right word for that.
Are you speaking to me as somebody who's having a secret birthday party this weekend where I didn't tell anybody that it's my birthday party?
Well, you told a couple of us.
I told a couple of people.
Also, your birthday was 10 months ago. I do want to make sure that we...
All the more to throw people off the scent.
Yes.
I just feel like it's so much pressure to have a party that's like just for me that I just made it like a Halloween party and...
10 months after your birthday.
10 months after my birthday.
Didn't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I think it fits you. And I think it's a good way for you to get that like birthday party vibe without having to like deal with all of the attention that you don't want to deal with.
I don't want it.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But I guess, you know, you did tell me to invite anybody regardless of your connection to them. So maybe in a way I'm being the Candace of your birthday by inviting my entire D&D group. Whom you've never met to come celebrate.
Yes. Do you think one of them will bring me flowers and another one will bring me a charm bracelet?
I hope so.
So Logan shows up apparently unexpectedly and brings her a charm bracelet with a crossword puzzle charm on it.
Yes, it's
apparently
not cute, in case anyone was wondering.
No, and apparently he got it from like Claire's or something because it keeps breaking, like immediately.
Yeah.
Keeps breaking.
It sort of looks like it's attached by one of those little elastic cords. But, you know, I mean, he got her something.
Well, she seems to love it, so that's good.
This actually feels kind of like my first indicator into maybe some of the differences in the writing, with it being like a female writing duo. Logan is being like way cuter than usual. Like he's being a bit coy. He's like being sort of openly flirtatious all of a sudden. Like it's like after their wedding date, but she's still surprised to see him and didn't invite him to her birthday, like as if none of that ever happened. But he's sort of like being very charming and like cute and sweet, and he's like facing her and like sort of being very like
very
open body
openly
posture,
admiring of
her.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels like maybe the male writers wouldn't have quite gone there with this.
Were really focused on like the hard-boiled detective.
Yeah,
like
talk to me.
Rook.
Yeah.
So they watch the act where the assistant fires a bullet at the magician and he is supposed to catch it in his teeth and he has Tess write her initials on the bullet, which made me sweat because I hate it when people call on me in those types of situations.
But he doesn't have her write her initials, actually. He says, write anything
Any
you
word.
Want
yes.
on this. And she, a crossword puzzle expert, knowledge of all the words in the English language, apparently, including something later, decloven, some weird word that will come up to you, writes TH. She's like, I don't know. TH, that's me. But we also get a snide comment about Josephine prior to this. Did you catch that?
Mm-mm.
So first they ask for a volunteer to do like a quick short magic trick.
Yes,
and
yes,
Joseph,
yes,
well,
yes, yes.
An older man volunteers and Alistair sort of like ignores him and looks for the cute young thing in the audience, finds Josephine. Josephine goes up there and he's like, you know, tell me something special about your watch. And she says, it's the thing that gets me to work on time every day. And Tess turns to somebody and says, well, she's late to work every single day, so.
Oh, boy. Why are we supposed to hate Josephine?
I don't know. I really like Josephine. Like, her hair's changed in each of the three movies. She's, like, coming to Tess's birthday party. She brought her an intern. Like, I think Josephine is great, and I think Tess is kind of just, like, dogging on her. Not loving it.
But some of us just don't process time in a meaningful way.
That's true. In Tess's positive column, her red dress is amazing.
Oh, my God.
It's stunning.
Stunning. Yeah.
The buttons, I thought, you know, I would hate a dress with that many, like, decorative buttons, but it was so cute.
They knew they were going to send her up on stage to just walk up there, look gorgeous, walk back down. Of course, the magician ends up dying unexpectedly from, at first I thought a gunshot wound because I was confused. Logan ends up commanding the room and taking over. And then the lights go out, which actually also made me sweat. Like, that actually was a scary moment for me. So Logan starts to investigate, but of course gets inside info from Tess and tells her to leave this one alone. And she promises not to get involved and then immediately follows the woman upstairs at the mansion, who then disappears.
Yep.
Without a trace.
Magic.
And my next note is, OMG, the pistachios make a comeback. Did you notice them this time?
I didn't. My next note was, I hate magic. I was really focused on that.
Okay.
I'm going to notice the pistachios next time for sure.
Well, he specifically uses a pistachio to illustrate the bullet trick. So he actually, like, reaches into his little snack pack and pulls one out to demonstrate.
Do we think that Brennan brings this bowl of pistachios for his own trailer? And he's like, I cannot be parted from them. They will become a part of Logan's character.
I think that David Duchovny's character, Mulder in X-Files, I think David Duchovny was really into sunflower seeds, and that became a thing for Mulder, is that he always had sunflower seeds.
Interesting.
So possibly. So Alistair did not actually die from a gunshot wound, but from poison, a fish toxin he got from the scotch that he drank, that he got from his assistant, Bianca.
Oh. We didn't mention them earlier, but we did see a quick snapshot of Alistair and Bianca before their act. Like, we saw the snapshot of them practicing the bullet trick, and then we also saw an interaction between them, and, like, the trunk was delivered, and, like, that whole, like, big weird plot point that sort of is meaningless later, but yet is focused on a lot. Bianca is the assistant is played by Caitlin Leeb, who I recognized from a movie called Christmas with a View. And I don't know which network put that on, because I just see things and click on them. But it wasn't very good. And her acting was sort of the same.
Was she a flight attendant?
She was maybe a cook at a hotel ski resort restaurant.
Oh, I saw that one too.
Yeah.
That's a right.
And then like some, like, mainstream cute guy came in and was like maybe going to buy it, or I don't remember the plot.
Yes.
But I feel glad that she got that, like, this sort of, like, guest starring role, and then I don't know the timeline obviously, but then she kind of moved up.
That's right. I did not recognize her at all. Good catch. I think that was, that might have been a Netflix one. I don't know if that was Hallmark.
It's much more likely that it's Netflix, because, as we have stated maybe before, I didn't really know anything about Hallmark until this podcast began.
Yeah. Okay, so Tess goes back to the manor to insist on getting her sweater back from Alistair's assistant, Bianca, who happens to be the main suspect. And then Tess also helps her, quote, clean up after her dressing room is trashed, which means that she just looks at all of her stuff. And she discovers that Bianca and Alistair were a hot item until Bianca suggested that maybe she could also be a rock star magician. And Alistair didn't like it. He couldn't handle the two stars in one relationship. It's too bright.
Yeah.
Tess and Logan spark all over the hallway, where she does an amazing impression of Logan's, "Tess, you better stay away from this one," that I really appreciated. And I think it made me LOL.
This was, I think, the second meet cute between the two of them that we had in this movie. More to come. I don't know how many you can put in a movie between two characters.
Well, last time I thought about it again, because it's like those meet cutes where they keep running into each other at the same, like basically to check out the same suspect that maybe does need a new name, its own name.
Yeah, it does. We'll coin it. I feel like we can do that. But also, this was another question I had about Tess. Like, I guess this just doesn't feel like normal behavior to me. Like, it feels like she's a bit too, like, let me go to your dressing room. Let me help you clean up all of your stuff. Let me, like, interrogate you about your relationship with this man who just died that you were clearly, like, had some kind of close interaction with on a regular basis. And, like, I don't know. It felt a bit, her personality just seemed to be a bit more, like, raw in this one. Like, they, like, brushed off a lot of her, like, kind of cute edges, and they just sort of made her like a dog with a bone in this episode movie. Whatever, this installment.
It seemed very blatant.
Yeah,
like, first of all, that she's like, can I get my sweater back?
Yeah,
from this woman whose boyfriend, partner, whatever, magician boss was just murdered.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, let me help you clean up. And then just starts, like, blatantly snooping.
Yeah. And then Logan sort of, so Tess does her little impression. And then Logan sort of echoes a lot of my sentiments about magicians out of nowhere, which was really gratifying for me.
Right. How about a meat sleuth?
A meat sleuth.
A meat sleuth.
Well, what if we just say a meat sleut? That doesn't work. That sounds like a... never mind.
That sounds like a Polish stew or something.
Yeah. A meat sleuth. Okay. We'll workshop it, but I like it.
Yeah. Candace tells Tess that she saw Alistair perform at a charity benefit without Bianca. Because Candace is always doing some... You know, she has a passion for the arts. So she's always doing some high society whatever and knows everybody. But I really loved, I don't know if this is the female writers that made, because they at one point run into Reed out on the street, and I feel like in previous episodes or movies that Candace would have done like her real horn dog, just some like really intense flirting with Reed.
Yeah,
but instead in this one I feel like she shows off her psych skills a lot.
Yeah,
like, a lot of her like professional insights.
Yeah,
she did. I appreciate it. It was like a little more depth to Candace than just like wink,
I'm a coug.
Mm-hmm. Winston is back as Logan's partner, and they find a love note at Alistair's apartment. And then Alistair's aunt comes into the station to talk to Logan, and we find out that Alistair's sister Claire identified the body. But the aunt thinks that's weird because the sister's an anthropologist who lives in South America. And she just, like, is barely ever in town, and then she hasn't seen her. So, like, how did she, like, find out that her brother died, whisked in from South America to identify the body, and then didn't stop in for, like, a nice pot of tea or just, like, a little chat with the aunt?
A lot of things literally just clicked into place for me about the fairly poorly written plot of this movie.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. How did she, indeed? Okay.
Yeah, like, who reached out to her? I mean, they do kind of dog on the corner a little bit later in the movie, but
yes.
Yeah, that was a little shady. The aunt also says that Rocco, who I guess we're supposed to know who that is at this point, it's the guy who owns the Magic Manor, was trying to get more money from Alistair and wanted to be a headliner. Was he teaching Tessa's class at the beginning? I can't remember. Or was that Cormac?
I think it was Cormac.
Okay. So we also do get to meet Cormac, who's teaching Tess's second class, and whose face looks like maybe the doctor sort of like yanked him out with a clamp when he was born.
Yeah.
Is that a thing that happens?
No.
John swears that when the baby or when he was born, the doctor used forceps to pull him out. And so he swears that one half of his body is a different sort of shape than the other. That like one has like very sharp edges and like one side is sort of like smushed in edges. Is that possible?
No. I mean, John's really like reading into his own aura a lot.
His own origin story?
Yeah.
I mean, probably also they deliver babies probably different in your era than like way back in the day.
Well, forceps can definitely cause birth-related injuries no matter the time of the century that you're using them. But as far as like causing one side of your body to permanently be more pointed than
like,
the other?
Can it like leave a little dent or like do you, when you're first born, do you have a little bit of malleability where you can kind of like, if you went like burp to your nose, would it create
like
a little point?
Like if you put your thumb in your mouth and blew on it, would you like blow back up like a cartoon character? no, they can cause like birth related injuries and they can cause things, but not like a full
nose
bilateral difference.
Okay. Like what if you wanted your child later to have like a real nice cute little ski jump nose, could you like right when they come out, just like pop out, could you go like and like create a little like pinch?
Yeah, but you might hurt them.
Well, it's all worth it, right?
Maybe.
Because ski jump noses are really adorable.
Only time can tell.
They'll get better jobs when they're older.
Unless they have to wear a mask. Like the rest of us.
Yeah. So Cormac used to be Alistair's partner. But Alistair left him to do tricks with another magician named Sinclair. And Cormac seems to be handling that really well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I made another note about Lacey Chabert's fake laugh. Did you pick up on it this time?
No.
Ha, ha, ha. No, that's not it. Ha, ha. Ha, ha.
Ha, ha. I'm just guessing. I don't remember a laugh.
Okay. Tess researches the elusive Sinclair and decodes the cryptic messages on her website in about 40 seconds with Josephine. This leads her to a secret location in a back alley where she just wanders in. Sinclair turns out to be a sassy older lady with a vaguely British accent who loves the spectacle of illusion and comes straight out of, I'm guessing, Harry Potter. I don't actually know the Harry Potter world, the Potterverse, but I felt like she was probably, that was the vibe I was getting from Sinclair.
Huh. Okay.
Does that sound?
Who can remember?
So a woman over our back at the police station, a woman named Anne Morrison's fingerprints were all over Alistair's props. And she was involved previously in another illusionist's death, whose name was Zephyr, in Las Vegas. And whoever this was clearly at the manor the night of the murder, but there's no record of anybody interviewing her. And then I noticed that they have the most atrocious photo of her on the murder board. And I guess, did I miss, like, where did this photo come from? Do you remember this?
The photo of Anne
Sinclair, or sorry, Anne Morrison.
Anne Morrison. No, they didn't talk about where it came from.
It just was there.
But I wonder if it was after the explosion. Do you remember the explosion?
Yes. And was Zephyr?
Yeah. Zephyr's died in an explosion. So maybe we were meant to assume that she was near.
Because did she look like she'd been through an explosion?
In that picture, she looked pretty... She did. Yeah.
It reminded me of the other day an elderly woman in my women's cult accidentally sent me a photo of her that she clearly took by accident, like while she was holding her phone, and she was like looking at a menu in a restaurant. So it was like, it looked a lot like that photo of Anne Morrison. Like it was like, I'll have to pull it up and show it to you, but it was literally just like up, like from like up here. Like that's what this photo looked like on the murder board of Anne Morrison. Except it looked like she took it in like an airplane bathroom.
Yes. Her, yes. I got an answer to one of my questions from the last movie, which I don't remember if I asked it during the podcast, but I wrote to myself, how are they putting things up on the murder board? Double-sided tape ? And then we get a little quick back view of the murder board in this part, and it's little tape rolls, the same that we learned how to do in second grade.
Oh, cute. I was picturing that little gummy stuff that you used to use in your locker.
Sticky tack.
Mm-hmm. Also, this horrifying photo of Anne Morrison is posted next to an amazing photo of Bianca, who looks effortlessly stunning, which is sort of unfortunate for Anne. Logan goes to interview Cormac and looks uncomfortably handsome. I felt I was a little hot under the under the collar.
You got a steam level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had to let some of the steam escape. I think it's his scruff. I really enjoy a lot of scruff. I always try to get John to grow out a little bit. Maybe he'll do it for 2 days over the weekend, but he loves to be clean shaven.
Mm.
But I think it's very attractive when men have a little bit of scruff. And then maybe his blue jacket made his eyes look extra blue. And then he had a really nice fluffy curl in his hair. It was just really, I was like, oh my.
I think I was immune to it. I didn't register it.
All right.
Well, I was actually very focused on the scruff because it traveled all the way down his neck right to his clavicular area.
To the place where his wax technicians
began. And so that's sort of all I could think about was that seems really uncomfortable to have just stubble all the way down your neck. Collars and coats and mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, it was unexpectedly working on me. I didn't see it coming. It was when I went to go see Depeche Mode, and at the very end of the show, a Dave Gahan, who was wearing just a vest with no shirt underneath it. He was just wearing a vest during the show. And then at the very end, when he walked off stage, he took off the vest and threw it in the crowd. And out of nowhere, I involuntarily went, ah! And was just immediately mortified.
Oh,
I didn't know where it came from. This is the, the moment that I had when Logan was interviewing Carmack. Tess shows up to the manor again to helpfully snoop around Bianca's room and learns that a trunk is missing. And they think this trunk came from Sinclair and was a new illusion that Alistair was working on. And Cormac is already, what is this, a day after the murder? Cormac is already ready to go with a new show. He's got some dramatic new posters of himself that they're already posting. And Bianca is going to be his assistant. Which I honestly, at this point, I couldn't remember who the killer was from when I watched this before. And I kind of thought it was Bianca. I feel like I remembered, she wanted to be the star of the show. Mm-hmm. And then
she handed him the glass that the poison was found on.
Mm-hmm. And he had his sexy, mysterious dance partner. I thought I remembered that. And now she's going to be Cormac's assistant. When is it going to be her day in the sun?
Mm. Yes.
Alistair. Tess and Logan have some banter / crime solving.
Another meet sleuth.
Meet sleuth.
Did not expect to find each other. For some reason, he still doesn't expect to find her at the murder scene.
In front of her desk.
Oh, are they back at their desk?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Meanwhile, someone is messing with Bianca's dressing room before the show, and she calls Tess for some reason. I mean, Tess did ask her to call if anything weird happened, but it just seemed
like... Logan did too, and he's sort of the detective of the case.
Or wouldn't you call your mom or your friend or...
Well, she doesn't have those.
I guess not.
Nobody here has any real connections.
No, complicates the narrative.
You know what else complicates a narrative, Kat? Random tech billionaires that somehow get inserted for no reason that we really don't need to address at all.
the CEO of Red Herring Industries.
Yes, God, yeah. Paul Drexler.
Paul Drexler, I didn't even...
Yeah, I wrote it down.
I don't even know.
And then I
was
like, why did I do this? This was pointless. Very annoying.
I at this point, when Bianca came on stage as the beautiful, lovely assistant, I wondered, are there any male magician assistants?
Probably now.
And then I wondered then, of course, okay, well, are there female magicians? Because I've never seen any.
Mm.
And so I did a little research. The oldest magic organization globally has only 300 active female members out of 4,000 known masters of illusions. And they speculate on their website that this is because women who practice magic were considered witches and were killed.
Well, not, no. They don't, do they know anything about the history of witchcraft? It wasn't like women doing card tricks and getting
pulling balls
pressed
out from behind
people's
ears
to death because of it.
Pulling out a doubloon out of
Your doubloons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I see their point.
Well, there seems to be some overlap with necromancy, which seems like a totally different thing to me.
Yeah, what?
But there is this woman named Madame Adelaide Herman, who is known as the Queen of Magic and was born in 1853. And she was the assistant for her husband's axe. And then when he died, she just took over the show on her own. And she did the bullet catch trick. I think she was one of the earliest females to do that. And then she continued to do her magic show well into her 70s.
Oh, wow.
Until her props and show animals were destroyed in a warehouse fire.
That's pretty suspicious.
Which seemed like, there were a lot of fires back then. This would have been like in the 20s or 30s.
Oh,
just
okay.
Like constant fires. Like
Triangle Shirtwaist Factory.
Mm-hmm. So Cormac is bombing on stage as the main illusionist when Tess goes into Bianca's dressing room to investigate after her call and discovers that her trick handcuffs are still in the room. Which I would assume that she maybe just had more than one pair or that they were going to be using those like after intermission. But Tess immediately, of course, correctly infers that this must mean that she was actively about to be killed by Cormac in her coffin thing. And of course she was. And it's only after Tess comes barging on stage that we can clearly hear Bianca screaming inside the coffin to be let out. Cormac basically gives a no duh when accused of murder, because if he was going to murder Bianca, he would have thought of like a million better ways to do it. And so it couldn't be him. And I worried that that's how I'm going to sound if I'm ever accused of murder, because I would summarize like the last five datelines that I had just seen. And be like, if I was going to do this, I would have done a much better job. Here's what I would have done. Let me just spell it out for you.
If I did it,
I wouldn't have gotten caught. And then I'd...
And you wouldn't even be here. So therefore...
go behind like a drape. Candace tells Tess that at the charity benefit, which actually then we find out that it benefited the manor. It was like a fundraiser for the manor. That's not charity.
By Ethel Matthews, a useless name that we hear repeated multiple times.
Well, Ethel Matthews had an antique snuff box stolen.
Mm-hmm.
I had to look up a snuff box, which
it's a
is
a rich person thing. I don't.
Well, first thing that comes
I
up
assume.
On Google, an endangered mussel.
Oh.
Second thing is it's a bone deformity.
What?
Yeah, it's like when you're on your hand, like when you have too much of a, so you could, like a deformity here, so that you could put your snuff like in this little like pocket of your hand and then use it that way.
Hmm.
Okay, so that's missing. So they're wondering about other thefts. Reed does find out about some other thefts at fancy schmancy events.
Mm-hmm.
So they think maybe it was Alistair. And Alistair came to the benefit gig with a tall, attractive blonde. So, yes, the tech billionaire red herring was at the show and then quickly left with his bodyguard and was caught on camera loitering. I didn't even need to write this down. We find Tess in the police station surrounded by dudes who are all laughing at ? Some of her witty wordplay.
This seems to be a lot of what she has to offer.
One of her, did you know that the history of this word is
blah, 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 blah. That's how much I know about the history of words. Mm-hmm.
So while she's at the police station, she sees the murder board and that amazing bathroom selfie of Anne Morrison and gives a scoop to Logan that that is the elusive Sinclair.
Elusive.
With some charming banter.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to check out Sinclair, who still has footage of whales projected onto the wall of her gigantic warehouse.
Anne looks amazing in overalls.
She does. She started a new life after Zephyr died, which involves a fake British accent because we find out she's from Indiana, overalls, and wearing a crystal around her neck, which I thought was delightful. And her warehouse looked amazing.
It looked really fun. She had like power tools,
mm-hmm,
and like welding lights going off.
Mm-hmm, a lot of welding. Tess finds the ballroom dancing studio where Alistair and his mysterious tall blonde would go and, of course, invites Logan, who drops his pistachios to meet her.
Oh, but she has to solve another word clue conveniently in order to find the dancing studio. And she calls, like, multiple of them before finding one that corresponds to the associated word clue in this. So many word clues left behind,
mm-hmm,
in this murder investigation. Yeah.
Always. She figures it out. Also, I feel like she made Josephine look up all of these dance studios, but Tess is like the one that actually made the calls, which I thought was interesting.
Well, she's can't like be left out. She has to like have a way to dog Josephine later. I had to make all of those calls myself.
So Logan and Tess, of course, have to dance the tango, of course, and it all works. I am enchanted and rewind it to watch it again.
I did feel like this was very hilarious and probably the cutest moment that we've seen between them ever in any of these. I guess this is the third one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked this one. Tess was clearly like acting like turned on and just like confused and like surprised by Logan like suddenly being like, what's his name, Frederick Astaire, and just dancing his little toes off. And then he did that thing where she's like, look at that, Logan, and he said, I'm looking, and he was staring at her because he had her in a deep dip. It was an enchanting scene. I liked it.
Yes, I get butterflies just thinking about it. It was delightful. And I know last week you were like, he seems to really like her. Don't know really how she feels about him, but I feel like this was the moment
the
where
first
like,
time
she's
you,
sort of like, yeah. Was like, ooh.
He also accused her of having a Napoleon complex, yes, which I thought was hilarious.
I really enjoyed that as well.
Because isn't that specifically related to penile size with Napoleon?
I thought it was just height.
Oh. Wow. Sorry. Sorry, everyone, for being a perv.
I could be wrong, but I think he was just super short, right?
I'm questioning everything now.
Okay.
I don't know.
And Lacey is also a teeny weeny person?
Yes.
Well, if we need to just maybe just pop off and find out just how tall she is. Stevie Nicks is 5'1". Just, you can pack a lot of power in, but she also wears really high heels.
Does Stevie wear boots?
She does prefer boots.
Oh,
yeah.
Lacey's 5'2". That's not.
Oh, that's not bad.
It's not that short. Maybe Logan's like really tall.
Yeah, I thought that he was. And then there was some one we were watching where like there
he's
was.
He's only
like
5'10".
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah, there was some man in one of these episodes that towered over Logan. I can't remember who it was, but He's only 5'10".
For the record, height doesn't really factor into anything in either of our lives, but specifically related to like the need for the shoes and like, yes, an 8-inch height difference doesn't really seem like, is that 8? Did I do math right? I don't know. The tango.
It worked.
It worked. It distracted us in multiple ways.
Also, I always, whenever I've danced with a partner, I always try to lead, even though I don't know the steps. And I'm always concerned about what this says about me. I've always kind of worried. They meet Julia, who's Alistair's secret dance partner, who claims to have been at a dance competition the night of the murder. So, which they do confirm later that she was, right? They, like, won second place or something. But then that was, she was there, though. That's who Tess saw disappear up the stairs.
Oh, man. Yeah, this was one of many loose ends that I struggled with in this.
Okay, yeah.
More than in the last one. Yeah.
Logan discovers that there's some missing space in the manor via some blueprints, which is where the trunk must have disappeared into. At the same time, Tess is testing out that theory herself in her signature leather jacket, which I had totally missed in this one. She's been wearing like a lot of long blazers, which are cute, but I don't know what, like, it's like she's trying to hide something, but she doesn't need to hide anything.
Yes. No. Nothing
so maybe
to hide.
She just likes, oh, maybe it's a length, like, because maybe she does feel like she's a little height challenged and that like sort of elongates her and makes her look taller.
Or she looks like, well, I don't know. But did you register that one of her jackets was like crossword puzzle themed?
No.
It was like white with a black grid on it.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah.
For Tess Harper.
It is fun for her. Yeah.
I think it's a secret to her sleuthing. She finds a secret stairwell and immediately goes into it without shooting a text to anyone to let them know. Luckily, the bracelet that Logan got her at Claire's keeps breaking off and falling off and leaves a clue for Logan to find her. And Tess is caught in the secret tunnels by a big, scary dude with a gun, which I found to actually be genuinely scary. I was actually scared in that moment.
She did a good job of, like, screaming and fighting. She didn't do that thing where she's kind of, like, freezes and she's like, eh. She was like, bah, and, like, really screaming.
He's got her gun!
Yeah. Yeah. And her hair was whipping around. And, I mean, yeah, she fought back. I thought that was a good touch.
Yeah, the guy also looks a lot like our friend Rob,
who we have been seeing in many iterations over the last week.
Logan runs him off, and they find out other things have been stolen from ritzy gigs that Alistair had been a performer, including an antique bowl that Tess knew way too much about. She immediately was like, oh, the 17th century da-da-da dynasty?
Qing dynasty da-da-da-da-da.
That's worth a fortune.
And she's also purports herself to be friends with Paul Drexler.
That was a great scene. Yeah, so then she and Logan run into each other. They have a meet sleuth at the Fences place. Whatever that is.
The antiquities store.
Yeah. And learn that the bowl was sold by our friend Rob, who apparently was wearing a skull ring, like from Hot Topic.
Yeah, Spencer like, Gifts,
do
maybe.
Do grown men wear gigantic skull rings?
Well, if they're licensed killers, maybe. Maybe to just like... Just like one of those little signals that
just
you can
to throw
give
that
someone.
Vibe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like one
good
day
business.
You'll be a skull and it will be because of me type of vibe.
Mm. This leads to an enhanced moment where the police are able to zoom in on a grainy security footage and see tiny, tiny details.
Yes.
Enhance. Plot twist. The body in the morgue is not Alistair. It's Julia's husband. I didn't see that coming. I totally forgot about that.
Well, they never talked about it. They never talked about Julia's husband.
Yeah, we didn't. Well, we didn't find out about Julia really until
the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Julia was posing as Alistair's sister to identify the body because they don't check IDs at the coroner, which they actually call out, which
right.
is kind of fun.
And was it a fake coroner?
I think the coroner was real.
Okay.
The doctor was fake.
Okay.
Which I, when the doctor first came, when they did like, is anybody here a doctor? And he ran up there, I did thought that he seemed like he didn't know what he was doing and that he was really fake, but I just thought he was a bad actor.
Yeah.
Which checked out.
Yeah.
But apparently he was a plant.
Yeah. Well, Logan should be trained in like the administration of basic first aid. I guess we, you know, we can't speak to the skills of various police forces in providing that service, but yeah.
Yeah, because he just does it for a sec, and then he's like, yeah, there's nothing else I can do.
Well, he's gone. So, later.
Tamara, the Spunky Dance studio owner, has another asymmetrical haircut.
Yes.
Like that one sales lady and
yes.
The other one.
And she wears her necklace, like, over her clothes.
Mm-hmm. She lets Logan know that Julia skipped town and left her apartment as is, which kind of stressed me out.
Mm.
Although I guess she could rent it furnished to the next
person,
but I was like, oh my gosh.
And charge more. Classic case of capitalist landlord making a profit.
Tess finds another secret area to the manor and again goes into it without letting anyone know. Uh-oh. Very Trixie Belden.
Yes.
It's a real Trixie move. If anybody... is familiar with that mystery series for children from the 1940s.
If anyone is familiar with it, that person is you. I've never read nary a one.
I will say it spanned from the 1940s through the 1980s, and it was my sister's era, and then I read leftover books from hers. But that's just one thing that fairly elderly people are into that I'm also into. It's fine. I did laugh when she hears footsteps down when she's in the secret area and tries to hide very badly, and then it turns out to be Logan.
Yeah, that was good.
I did actually laugh out loud.
But this was another instance where I was like, this does not make sense. Like for someone who's supposedly very smart and like an intelligent individual, are we now supposed to be inferring that she has like literally no street smart whatsoever? I mean, we've been told that she like grew up on a farm, that she knows how to milk goats, that she like lost her parents and is an orphan or whatever, and like she's like so childlike in her pursuit of this like clue. She's like must get clue to the point where she just like in like randomly endangers herself. And it this just felt like all so odd to me, the way that she was pursuing these leads.
This is very common for Hallmark mystery heroines, or very much like that.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's just that they're so mystery minded and so, in search of the truth that they...
It just is, it's like giving me very one-dimensional, like we've like flattened out her personality all of a sudden. And I guess I don't know exactly what I was asking for.
I can see myself doing this because I don't value my life very much. And
well, you
I
also don't
I,
have a good sense of danger.
I have a terrible
you.
Sense of danger. I have very little like physical fear. It's part of a Enneagram type 9 to downplay negative situations, which John gets very frustrated at me because I just constantly downplay like either risk or like how bad a situation is or the amount of time it's going to take or whatever. I'm like, it's always like, it's going to be fine because you hate negative emotions or negative situations. And so I could see myself talking myself into like, it'll be fine.
Mm.
It's not a big deal. I don't need to bother somebody. That's the other thing, too, is I don't need to bother somebody with this information or whatever. I don't need to take time away from somebody's day for them to check a text.
Would you, counterpoint, would you perhaps bother the lead detective on the case
he's
of
got
which
a lot
you are
to,
investigating?
He's got a lot going on.
Yeah, this case is what he has going on. So it feels fairly appropriate to say, call him and say, hey, I know you're on your way. I got the key to the trap door. I will wait here until you're here so we can go down it together. Because Rocco told her Logan was on his way.
Yeah. Yes, he did. Yes. So maybe she just
and she still was that, like, bah, gotta get there first. And that just yeah, was very weird.
Which actually what seemed out of character to me was when she called him to go to the dance studio and right away was like, do you want to go with me? Like, that's the one that felt contrived to me because normally she would just go do it by herself.
That's very true.
But that one was a little contrived because they needed to tango together so they could fall in love.
Or what passes for love.
So down there, they figure out how Alistair and Julia pulled off the switcheroo with the bodies, which actually made somewhat sense to me. I know sometimes these plots...
That made perfect sense.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. I think so, too. I mean, I think logistically maybe not, but I could see how it all...
Yeah.
That they had a pretty good plan.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, well, actually, I know I forget it because I got confused again. They get locked... down there. So Logan and Tess are trapped down there, but then they untrap them and then go after them because the Rob character, our friend Rob, just sort of like locks them in there. He's like, they're in there.
He locks them in there. Then he calls someone and he's like, I got them. And then he unlocks them.
Who did he
call? One of Alistair or Julia, I guess. Because maybe he was like,
waiting for to get the okay? Because then it's him that comes and unlocks it and shoots at them, right?
Yeah.
Or he just, peeks over the very edge and looks down into the trap
and
area.
And sees the open door trap door.
Hello?
Hello? And then he goes down there and goes into the trap door area because they left it open to trick him.
Mm-hmm.
They red-herringed him. And then,
very Scooby-Doo.
Very Scooby-Doo.
That's a super Scooby-Doo move.
And then do they go after him through the tunnel?
No, he just, that's it. We don't see him again until he's in the interrogation room.
Oh,
he
that's
just disappears.
Right.
He's just gone. We don't know where he went.
Oh, that's right. They escape and Logan says, give me your hand.
Yes.
Or he doesn't say that. He says, hold my hand.
Hold my hand.
And then he drags her up the gurney, the little pulley system thing,
whatever.
Yeah, and back out the trapdoor.
And then they just stand on top of the open trapdoor and just chat about what's happening.
Right.
When, Rob with a gun is just, right downstairs, realizing
looking
that they foiled him.
Yeah.
And then he's going to come, running up that trapdoor thing and be like, rawr! If this is Scooby-Doo, that's what would happen. We also get a nice shot of his gigantic skull ring.
Yes. When he's unlocking.
Which seems like it would be really intrusive.
Yeah, if it's on his shooting hand.
When you're trying to, get some stuff done. You're just this is in the way.
Trying to do a crime or use chopsticks.
They let him get away and then go meet up with Julia and Alistair at their rendezvous point.
Well, Tess pulls out a notebook and says, I know where they're at.
Yes.
And shows Logan something in the notebook and then... We cut to Julia.
Uh-huh.
Packing her. She's loading her suitcase into the trunk of the car. And when she shuts the trunk of the car, who is standing there? It's Logan. Somehow. And he's like,
yes.
Gotcha.
Which wasn't she in a rush to leave town?
I thought it was days ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah.
But then were they hiding out? They had some location.
In the Bowery.
In the Bowery.
Yeah.
In an alley, which of course Tess figures out where based on that information.
Yeah.
And so they were maybe hiding out there. And then they were going to leave.
Yeah.
They just wanted to, there was something really good on TV that they wanted to not miss, the Grammys or something.
Yeah. Well, another loose end.
Yeah. I mean, I've tried to watch the Grammys after the fact, and it is really hard, so.
Yeah.
Maybe they wanted to wait a little bit. During the interrogations, they spill, of course, every detail. There's some fun mirror work that they do, I guess, to compare. Then they try to compare magic with police work.
Uh-huh. Alistair's like, you're not so different than me, Logan, Detective Logan. You and I, we've smoking gun. Mirror. And that's all he says. And Logan's like, but I rely on facts, Alistair. And I thought, do you? Seems like, well, we could question that a little bit if we wanted. And then Alistair's like, smug, smug, smug. And that's sort of it.
Yeah, so, oh, and we also get Rob is also
Interrogated.
He eventually gets caught. They find him down in the tunnels wandering around.
Hello.
Bring him in. Yoo-hoo. The same gang reassembles to watch Bianca do her act as the headliner. And Cormac is in the audience, and I'm sure he's totally cool with this.
Definitely, he's cool with this. He's, you know, him too. He supports women.
There are some meaningful glances between Reed and Tess.
Yeah.
And then Tess and Logan. And Tess and Logan have a moment outside of the manor and decide to go eat burgers and fries at a diner together.
Well, they decide to go eat at a diner together. Well, Tess kind of asks him to go eat at a diner with her because Logan's giving her, like, major bedroom eyes. And she's like, let's take this to the diner. And then he says, what do you want? And she says pizza. And he says, okay. And she says, burgers and fries. And he says, oh, all of it. And she says, yeah, all of it. And he says, well, what's your place? Where do you like to go? And she said, I don't have a place. And I thought that that was wildly just unbelievable that you live in New York City and you don't have a place that you like to go for food.
Do you think that Lacey Chabert ever eats burgers and fries?
No, it was definitely improv banter and it wasn't good. And I was sort of upset that someone spent their time like writing the subtitle so that I could I would not have heard that conversation without the subtitles.
Okay. Yeah, no, I didn't catch that last part. You had the subtitles
on. Yeah, I had the subtitles on. And so that was like, someone had to type out like their terribly improv banter. That was probably not even like the one that they wanted to do. It's probably just like an accident, but it was the best like pullback shot that they had to like save. Anyways.
Yeah, that might actually be the most realistic conversation because all their banter is very like zingy and like it is very well like
very Gilmore Girls-y.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that one was probably more realistic because when you are in that situation and like you're both a bit goofy and awkward, but like you don't care because there's just so many pheromones flying around.
The chemistry and you're just, like, of the sitch.
Yes. Yeah. And so like things are funny that under ordinary circumstances wouldn't be funny, but because you guys are like having your moment, it's like, ha 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 ha.
Yes. When burgers and fries become erotic, the memoir of Lacey Chabert.
Okay, so personal cats out of personal bags. What in this movie hit home for you, if anything?
I think it really just felt like it was just like jabbing a sharpened stick into my hatred of magicians.
Okay.
And so it just triggered a lot of that for me. The even like very charming Bianca with the amazing hair and like the cute jumpsuit, who like Tess was kind of giving bedroom eyes to actually. But anyways, even her like little trick at the end where she disappeared and then reappeared just made me like groan. Like I just, ugh. So there was just a lot of that. It felt very personal to me that like somebody would write this movie about magic and I did not like it.
Okay. I really felt it when Sinclair says she decided to sort of reinvent herself and devote her life to magic. Not that sentiment exactly, but she just says like that you only get one life, that you should be who you want to be. That really was hit a nerve, I think, for me. Like, I feel like maybe I'm in a stage where I need to reinvent a little bit and maybe make some, I need to maybe I'll start with projecting images of whales onto my walls.
Okay.
And just see where things go from there.
Okay.
Or take a welding class.
Yeah.
At the Votech, maybe?
Yeah. I think you can take, like, a cabinet making class there.
Mm-hmm.
That could be cool.
Yeah.
You could use power tools,
mm-hmm.
which is fun.
And then my magic connection. So I knew a guy in high school. I wouldn't say we were friends, but we ran in a similar circle. And he, even at that age, was very into magic. And I think that, I don't know if he was flirting, if this is flirting or if this is just magic, the world of illusion, I don't know. But I gave him a ride home at some point, and this is just like, it's like I'm in the moment when I think back on it. It was so vivid. Because as I said, I'm just like completely disinterested in this topic. Like I really just don't care. Like I don't care how this is done. I don't care how, like what the, I just don't care. And so he very much cared. And so I was trying to be nice and just sort of seem interested. So I think just like as an offhand comment said, like, oh, how, because he of course did a trick or an illusion, sorry. And I was just like, oh, how do you do that? And he said, leaned in, this is in a car, leaned in real close and said, can you keep a secret? And I was like, uh-huh. And he said, so can I. And then exited the car with the most dramatic, I mean, he had been rehearsing this. I can't even describe it to the full extent. Anyways.
Oh my God, I think it would have set my car on fire.
This guy is now sort of a successful magician. I did actually look up, his Wikipedia page was so detailed and so well sourced, like all the footnotes and everything, that you know that he did it himself. So he, I think, is like he's not like a David Blaine or something, but like he does have like residencies at certain casinos. He does go on like tours. He was on a very popular competition TV show. So I guess the joke's on me. I also wonder, he started doing this like right out of college. And his father is a businessman in town.
Was.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is he still a prominent property owner around town?
Well, he is passed on.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think like a few years ago.
Oh, okay. Anyways, I did wonder, because like he did a show like right out of college, like with legit like Siberian tigers and stuff. Like, you got to have, like, a lot of capital to, like, get that going right off the bat. Yeah, you can't just, like, work your way up.
Yes,
I would
guess. Your dad owns half of the properties in town and and slums college students into them. This is a real personal cat situation for me, because I was in fact, one of his serfs at one point. So
you were funding maybe, like, half of a tiger?
I funded probably half of a tiger.
Awesome.
Yep.
So that's my tie to the world of illusions. So I couldn't help thinking about that like this does have to be sort of like, you have to have a level of wealth probably to get into this. Like I would assume that like just like your average person couldn't like work up to having like a legitimate show. There's quite a bit of like, you had to buy a lot of stuff to make this happen, right?
You have to go to magic camp and class.
You have to take a lot of classes.
You have to buy a lot of red foam balls.
Mm-hmm.
Rent a couple tigers.
Get some top hats. I loved that the set decor for the magic manor in this was like a couple of wizard hats in the background.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Who were you attracted to?
Oh, no one. Elliot's gone. I still have heat for Winston, but he had barely any screen time. I really, really loved Sinclair's overalls. Not her, but the overalls. So I might have been attracted to the overalls.
Yeah, I loved her vibe.
Yeah.
I really liked Alistair.
Oh, the old silver fox situation.
And also the fence.
Oh, the antiquities dealer.
Yes. I thought he was quite something. He was quite fencing.
Ooh, okay. I'll buy it.
Any fanfic for side characters?
I was very uninterested in everyone in this.
I want a whole movie about Tamara, where she and the other gals from the dance studio take a cross-country road trip to a dance competition in Vegas.
Ooh.
And hijinks galore. Would you watch that film?
I would, yeah. Okay. I would watch that. That sounds great.
Yep. Invasion of the Hallmark Body Snatchers. I tried to look this up. The character who played the guy who played Rocco, I also thought that he was the killer because he's played a killer in something else. I couldn't find the exact movie, but
he has the buzz cut of a killer.
Maybe it was just his look, I guess.
Yeah.
But I kind of thought, like, because sometimes I get that feeling from actors in Hallmark movies because they've played a killer in a different film.
Yeah.
Or maybe he was a villain in, like, one of the traditional love stories. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was the boss that wanted the woman to work on Christmas or something.
Yeah.
Evil.
Rude.
Where's your steam level?
The tango really, like, took it up from, like, the sort of cool, tepid water I've been feeling to, I would say, we're getting to, like, I can see some bubbles below the surface.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're getting there. Any Hallmark IRL moments?
I went to a pumpkin patch with my boyfriend.
Oh.
Yeah. We took a picture. It was cute. And then we carved pumpkins together. On what was, according to astrology, the most romantic day of the year.
Wait, Christmas?
That's according to Hallmark astrology. But according to the other fake thing, I guess maybe that day was the most romantic day of the year. And that was my Hallmark IRL moment, but also turns out to be sort of one of those moments that is actually very nice and, like, very bonding to do together.
Mm-hmm.
And did you have any?
I was thinking that maybe I am currently, like, the Hallmark heroine in most traditional movies for, like, the first 3 minutes of the film, where she's just overworked and, like, too focused on her career. I'm just waiting for the part where I go visit, like, a ranch in Montana and discover what life is really about. And then just, like, immediately leave my whole life behind to go live on the ranch.
And scoop cow poop.
Mm-hmm.
Horse poop. Some kind of manure is going to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
You might do that. You guys have talked about moving north.
Mm-hmm.
So you might take a trip. See what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a while ago, I took a small side quest of my life, a couple days, to a tiny town in the foothills of the Ozarks, where I received a reading from a psychic at a farmer's market on a Thursday morning. And she told me that I was going to be finding a new home. That I was looking for where I belonged. And it really resonated for me at the moment. And I said, wow, that's amazing. That is what I'm looking for. And she said, are you thinking of moving here? And I said, oh, no.
Did she mean a physical home or more like a emotional belonging home?
She said both.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and that is a journey I've been on for a while, so. Good on her for picking that up.
Okay. Was there a big town festival that was, like, the organizer had just broken her arm and you needed to step in and...
Take over? No, I got pretty bad food poisoning and ended up staying in my hotel room for a lot of that trip, so... The rest of it wasn't very Hallmark IRL, but... Mm-hmm. But okay. Yeah. I think you should take a trip to Montana since you brought it up.
Yeah, or I just watched that one in Yosemite. That would count too.
If you want to go to California.
Yeah. Somewhere.
Somewhere.
Just somewhere where I can I don't really need to learn that this is not the way I want to live. I already know that. I just need to have that one magical week that just...
You need to find your center.
Changes all of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I think we have two more crosswords to go. So I don't know. I feel like you're slowly warming up a little bit.
I'm definitely warming up to Logan. This one really took me away from Tess. Mm-hmm. Like, I do think that the writers really, like, relied on this idea. I think this very Hallmark idea that we should give a person just, like, a buttload of hobbies but no actual personality. And so, like, that sort of... I feel like as this series goes on, we should be learning, like, more about Tess and, like, her motivations and, like, who she is and, like, see her have these genuine interactions and maybe even see her in, like, a moment of conflict where she, like, says to herself, like, should I go open the trap door before Logan gets here? Like, we have been talking about this at least 3 times a movie. Some person warns me from getting too involved in the case. And maybe I should listen to other people. I would just really like to see, like, any spark of, like, character development for her, because I think that there's a lot of room for it. But I think I am once again reaching for something that will ever remain out of my grasp in this genre of movie. I'm not sure. I could be surprised, and I'm open to that. But I did warm up a little bit more to Logan, I think, because they flattened him down as well. And that was just kind of nice to see him be like, haha, I can tango, baby. And not really, like, he didn't really do his detective thing in this episode, in this installment, as it were.
Yeah, I feel like that's, I mean, maybe it's a common theme. I don't know how well it's done in terms of, like, dialogue or scene development for characters, but, like, the theme of you have, like, a woman who's very independent and maybe has some trust issues or just hasn't really been able to rely on people in the past, and then gradually does learn that she can rely on other people, that she can trust other people, that she can lean on other people and maybe let a little people in a little bit. Let little people in a little.
Or any people.
Or any size person. And so maybe that's, which I think is a sound lesson. So maybe
it is a good lesson. I think I wonder, we haven't really seen that from her either. Mm-hmm. This, like, idea that she doesn't feel able to trust. She seems, like, remarkably well adjusted for someone who's supposedly been through so much loss, and, like, she's very smiley. She, like, never has an off day at work. She's just, you know, sunshine and rainbows, and, like, has this amazing, like, motherly aunt figure. And she seems fine. Like, she doesn't seem like she has any of these, like, I can't trust anybody. To me, like, it seems that she kind of has this arrogance, like, which this could be as I'm, like, saying it. Maybe this is me, like, criticizing a woman that's, like, confident in her abilities. But I do feel like if she's that confident in her sleuthing abilities, maybe that should be her job and not writing crossword puzzles.
Could also be, like, some 5 characteristics where, like, using your intelligence or, like, things that you know as a way to, like, create distance between you and other people. Mm. because vulnerability is scary, like, especially if you have to, like, admit that you don't know something or that you do need other people's help or whatever. That's, like, not necessarily, like, an issue with self-esteem or trust or whatever, but it's more just sort of, like, kind of like her whole character by this point is supposed to be that she's really smart, I guess, and that she knows a lot of things. And I think that's what Logan admires about her.
Okay. As someone with a 5 wing, I can definitely see that. Maybe that's what I don't like. Maybe I don't like that I'm watching this, like, part of myself Maybe I'm seeing too much of myself in Tess, and that's why I don't like her.
Just putting the mirror up.
Yeah, who knows?
Okay. All right, well, we'll see where this heads. You've been listening to
Hallmarked for
Murder.
Da-da-da.